Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up a little bit later this hour, we'll be talking about the New York waterfront. We'd like your stories on how you use the waterfront differently than you might have 5 or 10 years ago. So start thinking about that now. And we will be taking calls a little later at 212-433-9692. There's also the Brian Lehrer page at WNYC.org where you can post your story. But first, June 27th, 2009, the House, in a vote of 219 to 212, passes sweeping climate change legislation. Massachusetts Democrat Ed Markey, who chairs the Energy Independence and Global Warming Committee, calls it a revolution. I'm quoting him. He says, "This is a moment in history. This is what the American people were calling for in the election of 2008, a fundamental change." In the past year, nations from around the world gathered in Copenhagen to discuss climate change. Beginning in April, massive quantities of oil began spilling out into the Gulf of Mexico. It's been called the worst environmental disaster in history. In the Northeast, residents have faced wave after wave of heat, and this is looking to be the hottest July since record-taking began. What is happening in Washington? Senator Harry Reid announced yesterday the Senate would not be taking up energy and climate change legislation anytime soon. Why? Joining us to discuss that question is Congressman Anthony Weiner of Brooklyn and Queens. Welcome back to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you, Andrew.
And before we start, congratulations. You recently got married.
I did.
So,
thank you.
I'm sure you're having a wonderful summer. Before we talk about energy and climate change, which I promise you I do want to do, I did want to get your reaction to the Rangel findings. Do you think he should resign?
Well, no. I think he's entitled to his day in court, so to speak. In the way the ethics process is set up in this case, he'll literally get a chance to respond directly to the charges. I don't even know, and I'm a member of Congress, I don't even know exactly what the Ethics Committee charges were that they deemed to be worthy of proceeding on. But, you know, Charlie has done a lot for his country. He is, I think, entitled to have his day where he gets a chance to respond, and the ethics process is going to give him that opportunity now. And I think we should reserve judgment until we hear what the facts are. And we don't even know this morning exactly what the charges even are.
And Patricia Murphy was just on with us from Politics Daily, and she was saying that there's a lot of talk on Capitol Hill among Democrats that he will be a drag on the party in November. Are you worried about that?
Well, you know, I don't believe that most races in this country are going to turn on whether or not Charlie Rangel did or did not follow the ethics laws. But I can tell you this, that even if that's the case, the man still has a right to have be heard on this. And if it turns out that after the trial he is found not to be guilty of these things, then I think he's entitled to at least have that moment. I think that there was a lot of pressure within the caucus, and it was evident that he stepped down as chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. That turned out to be a very damaging thing for New York City, that's for sure. And I'm hopeful that at the end of the day he's cleared of these things, but he certainly has, I believe, every right to at least have his ability to respond to it.
Now, on to climate change. The events of the spring and summer would seem to have pushed the Senate towards climate change and energy legislation, not away from it, but over the summer, the sort of scope of what the Democrats were proposing in the Senate seemed to get narrower and narrower and narrower until Senator Reid said yesterday, we're just not even going to try to do this in any comprehensive way. What happened?
Well, I'll go back even further than last year when we voted in the House to pass energy reform. I mean, look, I can't imagine the table being set better for comprehensive energy policy reform than it is now. You've got the increasing power of Iran. Frankly, their growing nuclear power is entirely with the help of us pumping more and more money into the oil economy. You've got this oil disaster in the Gulf of unprecedented scope. You've got increasingly alarming sounds coming from the earth about the global climate change. And then you had gas prices in this period going up to near record levels. I can't imagine a better time to line everything up. And then when you consider that President Obama and many members of Congress, including myself, campaigned in 2008 on the idea of passing energy legislation, it seemed that the table was set as well as possible. But what we've run into is that we have this environment in Washington now that a relatively modest number of members of the United States Senate, two or three or four, sometimes even one, can bring legislation to a complete standstill. And you don't have this ethos that once existed in Washington of kind of, let's try to solve problems, even if we disagree on large philosophical things, let's try to solve problems. And what we found out over the last several months is there was not going to be a single Republican senator who was going to vote for even modest energy legislation. And there were also going to be a few Democrats who were going to have problems with just about anything we did, and that's a prescription for inertia.
What I'm sort of confused about is why, I mean, clearly some of these members of Congress feel that they are responding to what their constituents want. They feel that it would be a political risk for them to support, for example, cap and trade, or as it's sort of become in vogue now, calling it putting a price on carbon, the idea that, you know, sort of polluting and emitting carbon dioxide has some cost, some actual monetary cost. But you were out on the campaign trail in 2008. I remember seeing you in Iowa and elsewhere. And what I kept hearing from people, Republican and Democrat, was that climate change, after the wars in Iran and Afghanistan and the economy, was up there as an issue, and that people felt something had to be done. So I'm wondering how, in the last sort of 18 months, it's become something that's become a political liability.
Well, for one thing, I think we as Democrats, and this is a problem I have with the way that President Obama has pursued this as well, we've kind of been a little bit afraid of our own shadow. We haven't really gone out and leaned into these charges, and we haven't engaged this fight, I don't think. I mean, you know, the president gave a speech from the Oval Office about the oil spill, which was a moment of national attention on this, and it really wasn't a full-throated call to arms on, you know, call your senator and say, let's pass energy legislation to make us more energy independent, to save our economy, and also to make sure we don't have future oil spills in places, you know, like the Gulf. We haven't really engaged this fight particularly aggressively, and I think to some degree this is a pattern that has emerged with, I'm a frustrated member of the Democratic Party saying this, we've got this pattern of essentially we have tough things to do that are going to require us to make some tough decisions and lead tough political battles. But rather than lead those battles, we kind of flinch the moment things get tough. I keep hearing that there's not a 60-vote majority for energy legislation, as if we stipulate to the idea that, well, everything needs a supermajority nowadays. Where is this filibuster going to come from? Against making us more energy independent. Whoever that is, let them stand up and filibuster it. So this energy fight comes down to is a larger philosophical split that has emerged within those of us in the Democratic Party about how to pursue these fights. And I think that sometimes we go into knife fights carrying library books. We just seem unprepared to really engage the battle, and I think that was the case here.
So I'm having trouble adding that up because, you know, Obama obviously, you know, when he ran for president, he, you know, took this huge risk. He ran this long shot campaign. I mean, he, you know, got in there and fought hard. But that doesn't seem to reflect the way he's acted as president on any number of issues. I mean, you know, he did get health care reform passed. That was a huge victory. There was financial regulation reform that he signed yesterday. He also counts that as a victory. But in each case, he seems to rather be saying, like, here's my idea and this is what I think I should do, you know, sort of inviting, you know, Congress to sort of sort out the details. And it seems like what happens is you get, you know, as you are now with the climate change bill, that doesn't happen.
Yes. In my view, you've got it exactly right. Now, I can give you their side of the argument, but I should say that I think that what you've just described is exactly what happened. You've got the combination of a couple of things. One, I think the president, he engaged in this aspirational campaign, and it was ideological in the best sense of the word, saying that there are differences between the parties and we're going to fight for what we believe in, and we have the majorities to do it, and we have the American people supporting us. And this slightly transactional element that he governs by. And I think you are particularly right when you say he announces his intention to get something and then sends Congress out and says, you guys go do it. Well, we're never going to get to 60 votes unless we have the full-throated advocacy of the president. I was on saying these exact same things to you and to Brian during the healthcare debate, that we needed more of that. Maybe it didn't need to be a 9-month process to get to a bill that was weaker than we would have liked. Maybe we would have gotten something different if the president said, you know what, I'm going to really step up and try to make this thing happen. Now, in their defense, this has been an enormously accomplished administration. If you think of the major things that have gotten done, healthcare reform, financial regulation, a big stimulus package and the like, it is not as if they've been sitting back and hoping that things happen. Things have gotten done. But in the case of something like energy policy, this is the weakness of the Obama strategy, because we're not going to get to 60 votes unless he's walking around the country in tough blue areas and tough red areas and saying, you know what, we need your help and here's why it's important. And every time Iran in the news, he should talk about the energy bill. Every time he's in the Gulf, he should talk about the energy bill. Every time there's an economic problem that we encounter, and there are many of them, he should talk about the connection between our flawed energy policy and the problems in the economy.
Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. My guest is Congressman Anthony Weiner. We're talking about the announcement yesterday that there will be no climate and energy legislation taken up in the Senate anytime soon. Now, I know when you talk to members of the Obama administration and people in the White House, they say you don't get things through Congress by telling them what to do. And then they sort of bring up the health care battle of 1993 and 1994 and how that failed. And they felt that was too sort of top down from the White House. And then they will sort of say to you, you know, give us time. We get it done. Have faith in us. But I do wonder why they, you know, given especially that pretty much sort of everyone across the board, even Obama haters, believe he is a good speaker, why you don't hear him, you know, sort of out on the hustings with, as you say, a more full-throated support of some of the things he says he's for. I mean, what is your analysis of why that is happening?
Well, we started talking about energy policy, but really we can substitute any number of things here for this. This is the conversation that's going on among Democrats with our base and with some of those independent voters is which is the proper tactic to take. I think that part of the problem that we have is we have things that we all agree should be done, and unlike 1993 and 1992, we have pretty big majorities. This was the time to kind of double down and try to make some of these things happen. My view is that they've overlearned some of the lessons of the Clinton years, that yes, you can't just dictate to Congress what it is that you want, but you also can't go in the other extreme, which is sit at the White House and hope it all works out at the end and then make some changes at the end with the best you can. Look, we won't have 60 votes on anything unless the President of the United States, with all of his skill, can go to some of these states of wavering members of Congress and ask their constituents what they want in terms of an energy policy. I don't know too many parts of this country where if you go and explain that if we don't change our energy policy, we are going to continue to empower Iran to become a nuclear power with our money. If I don't know, there are too many places that you can't go and make the charge right now that if we keep drilling in places like the Gulf, that the oil companies are going to continue to cut corners as they do every single day and lead to more environmental disasters like we have down there. The president is the only one that can do it. Now, why don't they do that? I think to some of it's the president's It's the way the president views this process as you try to govern from the middle out. I think he fundamentally believes in the idea of bipartisanship. And as I said to him personally, bipartisanship has to be an ends, not a, has to be a means, not an end. You know, we can't, if you know, you look at the number of times you hear President Obama praising Susan Collins or Olympia Snowe, it's almost as if those two senators run the entire United States Senate, and we empower them by essentially leaving them in charge. And I got to say one other thing, and this is, it's easy for me to say as a member of the House, but I think I reflect the views of a lot of members, you know, my rank and file members of the Democratic Party. Let them filibuster. I keep hearing about the threatened filibuster. I think one of the things we need to do is more finely point out who it is that stopped these things. Just about any member of the United States Senate can go home over the recess and say he supported energy legislation. We have no idea who does and who doesn't. And that's the benefit of actually using the Senate rules to make a political point as much as it is to get out of the way of conflict.
All right, we are out of time, but just a very quick question. If the Senate doesn't take this up, this year, does that mean that you and the House have to start all over in the next Congress?
It does, and I for one am skeptical if we follow this strategy in the Senate that we're gonna be able to get to it this year. Look, I'll give you a brief insight. We had a legislation that would increase the oil spill liability of the oil companies that we were trying to pass in the middle of the worst of the spill just to make the oil companies liable for more of the damage because there's a cap under the law. We couldn't even get that out of the United States Senate. And so this whole idea that we'll maybe get a scaled-down version of the bill, I'm skeptical we'll even get that.
All right. Thank you very much, Congressman Anthony Weiner of Brooklyn and Queens. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the waterfront and how you use the water. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer.